Well, welcome. This week we're talking about love and respect. Several years ago, a pastor and author by the name of Emerson Eggerichs wrote a book called Love and Respect, same topic or same title. And I had the privilege, sometime after he wrote the book, of meeting him. He was here in town and did a seminar. I actually got to hear him do a talk on the topic, and it just intrigued me. It was a look at Scripture and a look at how what God calls us to in relationships in a way that I hadn't really thought about before. And so I got a copy of the book, came back, talked to the Rebuilders team and the Marriage Matters team, and talked about adding this as a topic. At the time, we were doing Marriage Matters Rebuilders in the summer. We did a summer session, and we had decided we'd put it in the schedule to teach it that summer. And so I'll tell you a story in a little bit that's kind of funny. But I was reading the book, as I sometimes do to prepare a teaching. So you kind of read a book differently. I'm taking notes, thinking I'm going to teach it. And at one point, I just kind of had to stop and went back to the team and just said, we cannot do this summer. And they said, why? And I said, because I'm reading this book, and not only is it great content, it's content that my wife and I need. And we need to do some work on this and apply it to our marriage. And so I need to first read it and read it with my wife and put it into our marriage way before I can teach it to somebody else. And so we actually postponed the introduction of this topic to Marriage Matters and Rebuilders until after I'd had a chance to do some work in this area. And so this is one of those topics that and books that has been extremely helpful for Karen and me and our marriage. And I think it will be for you as well. So I tell you that to say, pay attention. This is a phenomenal topic. But also, this might be a book that you want to get a copy of. And we've got some copies here, but you can easily find it online as well. And the information's in the back of your handout. So, so we start by talking about what Eggerichs refers to as the crazy cycle, the cycle that most of us get into. In our marriages, starting with the idea that men and women both need love and respect in marriage, okay? It's not just one or the other. We both need love and respect. Now, conventional wisdom would tell us, and common sense would tell us, that love is something that should be unconditional. We all want unconditional love. It's just something that's given. It's not earned. Hopefully, you've been on the receiving of unconditional love, this receiving end. Hopefully, you have been able to dispense unconditional love. That just seems normal for us. Respect, on the other hand, seems like it should be something that's earned. And so we love people for who they are. We respect people for what they do, right? And when it comes to men and women, women, we know, have a much greater need for love. And so a woman will often ask herself this question years and years and decades into her marriage, will continue to still live with this question: does he still love me as much as I love him? And so for women, women have a need for love and want to be reassured of their spouse's, their husband's love for them. On the other hand, men have a much greater need for respect. And so if you ask men, does your wife love you? Most men would say, sure, yeah, of course she does. But if you say, but does your wife like you, at that point he goes, well, maybe not so much, okay? I know she loves me, but I'm not so sure she likes me. And so what are they saying? They're saying she loves me, but she doesn't respect me. And to which most women would reply, I do love him, but he doesn't deserve my respect. And here's what I believe. I believe deep down inside, I think women want to respect their husbands. I really do. I think women long to have a husband that they can respect. If their husbands would just act in a way that deserves respect, that warrants respect. And so most women, most wives, live with this dilemma. I wish I could respect him, but I can't. Eggerichs says that when a husband feels disrespected, he has a natural tendency to react in ways that feel unloving to his wife. When a husband feels disrespected, his response tends to be to act towards his wife in a way that feels unloving to her. And when a wife then feels unloved, she has a natural tendency to react in ways that feel disrespectful to her husband. Hence what Eberich just calls the crazy cycle. And so without love, she reacts in a way that without respect towards her husband. Without respect, he reacts in a way that feels unloving to his wife. And the crazy cycle continues, because the more he feels disrespected, the more he acts unloving, the more she feels unloved, the more she reacts disrespectfully and in perceived ways, whether it's intentional or not. And the cycle goes, it's just this downward spiral that a lot of you have probably found yourself in before. Okay, so now here's where the disclaimer, here's where the warning comes. Be careful, because it's about to get a little bit warm in here, all right? Because what I'm about to say may sound counterintuitive, especially to you women, all right? So let's look at what the Bible says first. And this is where this whole principle comes out of, Ephesians 5:33. However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, look at this for just a second, because in this, what biblical scholars would say, this is command language. This is not a goal. God doesn't say it would be great if you could. This is, he commands men and women this here. The Bible first commands the man to unconditionally love his wife, okay? Secondly, the Bible commands the woman to unconditionally respect her husband. You know, not a goal, not an ideal. It'd be great if you could love your wives. It'd be awesome if you could respect your husbands. He just says, men, love your wives. Wives, respect your husbands, okay? So if we both need love and respect, why would the Bible so clearly command men to love and command women to respect? Why wouldn't it just command women to both love and respect? Well, the reason is because God has created women to love. We talked about that several weeks ago when we were looking at Genesis, that that God created women in Genesis 2 and 3. It says that God created women to be these intensely relational beings. Love just comes naturally for a woman. It flows out of this desire to birth relationships, to give herself, to love others in relationship. Granting her husband respect, on the other hand, will need to be very, very intentional, because it doesn't come naturally for women, all right? Likewise, for a man, respect comes naturally. It's the code we live by as men. In the workplace, in our friendships, men just live with this kind of unwritten code of respect. But granting unconditional love, knowing how to say and do loving things, that just doesn't come as naturally for us as men. And so God commands us as men to be very intentional about loving our wives, all right? You know, and I think for all of us, we grasp the concept of unconditional love, right? The idea that God would love us even when we don't deserve it. For God shows his amazing love for you in this, while you were still far from him, Christ died for you. That God loves us with an unconditional love. We grow up in families, hopefully. We talked about this last week, where hopefully we experienced unconditional love, where we're loved for who we are, not based on what we do. You know, and marriage is called to that same standard of love. We're called to love each other in marriage, to love unconditionally. But choosing to give love, not based on whether the other person has earned it or not. By definition, that's what unconditional means. It's not like you have to earn my love. I love Karen because God commands me to. I choose to love her, not on a daily basis, depending on whether I think she tends to deserve it or not, all right? But on the other hand, unconditional respect, that's a completely different ballgame. See, it's easy for women to think, you know, to think a man deserves respect even when he doesn't, to think a man needs respect even when he doesn't deserve it just proves that men are arrogant. You know, if that's true, then a woman who thinks, I just want someone to love me the way I am, to make me feel special, to make me the most important one in his life, I just want somebody to love me unconditionally, is also arrogant. So it seems normal for women to long for unconditional love. But to think it's somehow wrong for a man to need unconditional respect would be like having a man say to his wife, I'll love you, if you do the things or change these things or do that or prove to me that you deserve to be loved by me, then, I mean, if you deserve my love, if you'll prove to me you deserve it, or if you'll change this or do that or don't do this, then I'll love you. It just seems, it is just as upside down as a woman thinking that a man doesn't need unconditional respect, okay? And by the way, here's where men, guys, here's where we often get it wrong as men. See, men often mistake fear for respect. You know, the bad dude who goes out and picks fights, the bar fight guy who's always getting in fights, or the schoolyard bully who just fights people. And their thought is, I'll get people to respect me. They may not like me, but they'll respect me. Well, that's not respect, that's fear. And, you know, if you think about it, the guy who gets in that situation and the guy who walks away from a fight is actually the one that people respect. The one who chooses not to fight but instead turns away is actually who people respect. The person who tries to force people to respect him is really getting fear, not respect. In fact, you know, you hear dads sometimes tragically say, you know, I demand respect from my kids. Well, that's usually a guy who instills fear in his kids, not somebody who gains the respect of his kids, all right? So where do we get into trouble in all this? The first is in the area of communication. Eggerichs in his book says, just because you may feel unloved or disrespected does not mean your spouse is sending that message. And so this is the first place where we often get off track, is what we're perceiving that the other person is trying to communicate, okay? And the reason is this: men hear criticism as contempt. Men hear criticism as contempt. A study was done a while back, a survey was taken among men, and found that men's number one complaint in marriage, I thought this is intriguing. You know what men's number one complaint in marriage is? And it's not enough sex. That's probably a close second. But men's number one complaint is this: it seems like my wife is on a mission to change me. It seems like my wife is just always trying to change me. She's always telling me things that I'm doing wrong, always telling me what I need to do differently. You know, I remember several years ago I was teaching at a marriage retreat weekend up in Wisconsin. And I remember that before one of the sessions, we were just kind of sitting around talking. There was a couple there that was celebrating, I think, their 45th anniversary. This older couple had been there, been married for 45 years, and everybody was just kind of plotting for them, and they were talking. And somebody kind of made the joke, and they were people that all had known each other for years and years and years. And somebody made the comment, you know, it's taken you a long time to train him. It's taken you that long to train him. And everybody laughed, and I chuckled. I thought about it afterwards. I thought, you know, it's really intriguing. It's really interesting that we have this kind of idea that one of the roles of a wife is to train her husband. And where does that come from? This idea that somehow and by the way, we feel that deeply as men. We feel that our wife is on this mission to train us, to change us, to point out all the stuff that we're doing wrong, all the stuff that we need to do differently for her sake, whatever. And we feel that, and we feel it as criticism, and we take it as contempt, because men hear criticism as contempt, all right? On the other hand, women feel silence as hostility. Women feel silence as hostility. So when men hear criticism, things that they need to do or change, it doesn't take them long to start interpreting that as contempt for who they are. So when my wife criticizes me or criticizes something that I do, she doesn't necessarily, in her mind, she's not trying to communicate contempt for me as a person, but that's how I hear it. And so he may begin to think, I don't deserve this. Everybody else respects me but you. At work, people respect me. At church, people respect. Everybody respects me but my own wife. And when a husband can take it no longer, he gets up and walks out without a word. To his wife, that silence might as well have screamed at the top of his lungs, I don't love you anymore, because that's how she feels. He responds to her criticism with silence. And this whole concept probably seems counterintuitive to you as women. You might be thinking, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, I'm his wife. I can't point out the stuff that, you know, that he should do differently or better or the things that I don't like. That's just part of being married. And I'm doing it out of love. I'm doing it for his own good, and I'm doing it for our benefit. I'm really doing this all out of love. But he hears it as a lack of respect. He hears it as contempt for him as a man. He's hearing it as anything but loving, okay? And she may think, well, he's too sensitive. He needs to grow up and quit being such a baby about it, okay? That would be like him saying, you're blowing this whole love thing out of proportion. You're just too sensitive. You're always telling me I'm too harsh or don't care. You just need to get over it. So do you see how on the communication side, we send signals and the perception that we're getting from each other is not what is intended, but it's the reality of who we are. I remember a number of years ago, I'd put on some weight, and I wasn't huge, but I always carry all of my excess weight right in my stomach. All right, so I didn't look huge, but I did look like I was probably about 5 months pregnant. Okay. And I carried it right there. And Karen had tried to, and so she was concerned about that, because when a man carries his fat there, it has implications for his heart and other things. And so Karen would try and lovingly encourage me that I probably needed to watch what I eat and exercise and lose some weight. And yet, because of that whole criticism thing, what she thought was loving encouragement for me to, you know, be healthy and lose some weight, usually got met with resistance from me. And so I usually didn't do anything about it. I'm not proud of that. I'm just saying that's the reality of what happens inside a man. And so that went on for time, and I think she finally stopped saying anything. And then her health was going downhill. Our boys were growing up, and there was a part of me that just God convicted that said, I need to get healthy. I need to be around for a long time for my boys. I want to make sure I'm not doing anything that jeopardizes my longevity or my health. And so I began on my own, without saying anything to her, because frankly, just between you and me, I didn't want her input. I'm not proud of that. I just began to do some exercise and change my eating habits and stuff just on my own to lose weight. And I began to lose some weight. And a few months into that process, I hadn't lost all of the weight that I wanted to lose, but I'd lost 30 pounds maybe, and I, you know, only looked like I was 2 months pregnant, and, you know, but it was still there. And one time I'm in this process, and I'm standing at my closet getting ready to take a shower, and so I was mostly naked, or naked, as I often am when I shower, and she walked by me, and she patted me on the stomach, which was smaller than it used to be, but was still there, and she said, keep working on it. I want you around for a long time. And every woman in this room knows that what she said was loving. That what she was saying in essence was, I love you, and I want to be with you for a long time. And every guy in this room knows that's not what I heard. I heard criticism. I'm not proud of this, but my first thought was, well, screw it. I'm quitting my diet, which was exactly the opposite of her intent. She wanted to encourage me and motivate me. I felt disrespected. And so I interpreted her words as disrespectful and critical. In other words, I heard it as contempt. And so I responded like most guys do, because of our code of respect. I responded in silence. She interpreted my silence as uncaring and unloving. She said what she said out of love. I was silent out of respect. Because that code of respect that men live with is this idea of, it's better for me to say nothing, knowing that if I did say something, what came out of my mouth would not be good, and it wouldn't be loving. And so out of respect for my wife, I was silent. And yet she heard that silence as unloving. Now, this, just kind of a side note, ladies, just a little insight into your men. Simply giving advice to your husband can be heard as criticism. And so you have to be very, very careful in this area. We joke about this, but several years ago, I remember that anytime I was sick, you know, if I wasn't feeling well, I had a cold or a flu or something like that, Karen would say, how you feel? I just don't feel good. And, you know, what do you feel like? And I'd tell her. And then the next word out of her mouth was something about what I should do. Well, you know what you should do. You should take this or do this or do this or this. And that always felt very, very disrespectful to me. I didn't want advice. To be really honest, I just wanted a few, oh, poor babies kind of a thing from my wife. That's all I wanted. In fact, one time several years ago, I finally stopped and said, okay, I got to tell you this. We've been married for 30-some years, and I don't know that I can remember a single time in our marriage that I've been sick where my first thought was, I wish somebody would just tell me what to do. I'm not at a loss for what I need to do. It feels very disrespectful to me. Where, from her perspective, it was a loving response to her because she wanted me to feel better. So she's offering me advice. So do you see the complete disconnect between men and women in this area of love and respect? So, ladies, if you do or say something to your husband that is in your heart of hearts out of love for him, but he hears it as disrespectful, as criticism or complaint, he will not see it as having anything to do with love for him. He will completely miss the point of the communication, of the message, because he will interpret it as disrespectful and not hearing it as loving the way you intended it. I told you about the summer that I was reading this book. At the time, I still thought we were getting ready to teach it, so I was a little bit under pressure, thinking we were a couple of weeks away from doing it at Marriage Matters or Rebuilders. And so I was at the office one time working. Our boys were younger, and when our boys were younger, we belonged to one of the pools here in town. Most every summer afternoon, when she could, Karen would pack up the boys and take them to the pool for the afternoon. It was an easy way for her, fun way for her to be with some families and a fun way for the boys to play and for her to take care of them. So that was kind of a normal thing. But she called one day and said, and I had the whole afternoon blocked to read and to write. And she called and said, you know, what are you doing? And I told her, and she said, is there any way you can come to the, it's going to be a gorgeous afternoon, which it was going to be beautiful. She said, can you come to the pool and just be with us for the afternoon? It would be helpful for me. The boys would love it. And I said, I can't. I'm so sorry. I said, I'm under deadlines. I've got to get this done. And she knew I was working on that. And then she said, can you bring it with you and just work here at the pool? Can you read and stuff? And I said, I have so much to do. I can't risk being distracted. I really can't. And she says, I promise I will leave you alone. You can just read. It just will be helpful to have you here. So I said, okay. I'll do that. And it sounded great to me, the idea of being outside, but I was, I'm ADD, and so I tend to get distracted real easily. But I said, okay. So I went to the pool, had this book sitting by the pool, and I begin to read. And I'm sitting next to Karen, and I'm not 30 seconds into it, and she starts asking me questions. Did you hear about so-and-so? And what are we doing tonight for dinner? And what should we do about the thing in the backyard? And just normal conversation questions. Had nothing to do with this, but as she's asking me these questions, I'm getting angrier and angrier. And you ever have one of those where you like read the same paragraph 17 times? And it's like I haven't turned a page in like 5 minutes because I'm getting madder and madder as I keep reading the same sentence. I have no idea what the sentence is, but I just keep reading it like that. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. And so let me just ask you this. Guys, as I'm doing that, and she promised me she would let me just read and write, and she keeps asking me unrelated questions, how did I feel? Disrespected. Absolutely. And so I treated her with the respect out of the code of respect, and I sat silently, and I kept reading the same sentence. So now she's asking me questions, and I'm not even responding. I'm just acting like she's not even there. And how do you think she felt? Unloved. And finally, I'd had about as much as I could take, and I said, Karen, I got to tell you, I can't do this. If I'm going to be here, we've talked about this. I've got to read. I've got to get some work done, okay? And she stopped and she goes, I know, I'm sorry. I'll leave you alone. I didn't mean to do that. I'm really, really sorry. And so that one worked out. That was one instance where it actually worked out okay for us because we talked it through. But here was the funny thing. I'm sitting there reading and I'm getting frustrated that she's disrespecting me. And I'm reading this book. You think I would have figured that one out. But we talked about it. And I said, I told her that I felt disrespected because of that. And she apologized. And that one, you know, we got by on that one. Okay. But that's just this typical pattern that we get into as husbands and wives. And it's true for us as well. So the first area that we get in trouble is the area of conflict. The second one is in the area of, is in the area of communication. The second is in the area of conflict. John Gottman, we've talked about his research some in the past. John Gottman's research says that 85% of husbands eventually stonewall their wives during conflict. And we've defined stonewalling as shutting down either emotionally or physically leaving, but just being quiet and just completely shutting off any kind of communication. In the book, Egrich says, during tense exchanges, a wife's negative criticisms can overwhelm the husband, and he has little appetite to deal with it. The wife sees such exchanges as potentially increasing love between them. The husband, on the other hand, sees the exchange as an argument in which he is apt to lose respect. See, men look at everything through that frame of respect. So women experience stonewalling as unloving. For men, if you think about it, stonewalling really comes out of that code of respect. I'm trying not to react because I know if I react, it will be ugly and it won't be nice. Gottman says such interactions can produce a vicious cycle in marriages. The more wives complain and criticize, the more husbands withdraw and stonewall. The more husbands stonewall, the more wives complain and criticize. And so why? Let's talk about why is there this disconnect. Well, look at how men and women deal with their friendships differently. Men in their friendships with men, women in their friendships with women, we deal with our friendships very, very differently. For women, if women are close friends and there's a conflict among friends, they usually will at some point sit down and verbalize their feelings, right? They'll go out to lunch, do whatever. They'll share what's on their hearts. Because they know instinctively it will eventually lead to reconciliation. They care a lot about the friendship. They love the other person. They want reconciliation, and so they need to share and to get it out, okay? Eventually, one of the women will say, you know what, I didn't mean that. I'm really, really sorry. And the other one says, no, I'm sorry, and I didn't mean it. And will you forgive me? And yes, will you forgive me? Yes. And then they cry a little bit, and they hug. And then they leave and the friendship is stronger because they went through that process. Unfortunately, women think that this approach will work with their husbands as well because it works in their friendships with each other. Men, on the other hand, deal with conflict in their friendships completely differently. So imagine you're fishing with a friend and you're pretty astute at fishing, and you've been fishing your whole life, and you're pretty good at it, but you notice that your friend isn't, you know, catching anything, and you like your friend, and you want to help, right? And so you say to your friend, you know, I think it might help if you put a little bit more weight on the line, and then let it get to the bottom, and then just jig it a little bit before you bring it up kind of slowly, and your friend thanks you, but he keeps fishing the exact same way he has been. Do you say to him, hey, I'm just trying to help. I can't believe you won't listen to me. In fact, you never listen to any of my fishing advice or my lawn care advice for that matter. I bet if Bob was here, you'd listen to Bob's advice on fishing. You don't really care about me, do you? Why do we laugh at that? Because men don't say that. Why don't men say that? Respect. Men have this code of respect that just says, fine, let him fish however he wants to. And the friendship is not at stake. And when a man thinks, fine, let him fish however he wants to, the man means it. Fine, let him fish however he wants to. And the friendship isn't at stake. Now, let's talk for a few minutes then about, so men and women approach it completely differently in their friendships, and we bring that to marriage, not realizing that there's a difference, and we tend to treat the other person the way we would treat our friendships, and it just gets us into trouble, all right? Roman numeral 4, how to show love and respect in a marriage. So we've been in the crazy cycle. Lack of respect leads to lack of love, leads to more lack of respect. And so Egerton says, how do we got to reverse that. And we have to be intentional to be able to reverse the cycle. And here's how we do it. And he says the goal is to move towards what he calls the energizing cycle. And the energizing cycle is this, that he intentionally acts lovingly. His love then motivates her to act respectfully, which then motivates him to act lovingly, which then motivates her to act respectfully more. Do you have another slide there? So he acts lovingly. That motivates her to act respectfully, which motivates him to act more lovingly, which motivates her to act more respectfully. And he says we get into the cycle that is an energizing cycle that actually moves us towards the goal. All right? And he does this. Now, this is just some real practical advice that I'll kind of walk through quickly on how to reverse the cycle and how to kind of intentionally bring the energizing cycle into a marriage, all right? And he starts by talking to men, okay? So we're going to talk about women, but we're talking to men here, okay? And he uses the acronym COUPLE, C-O-U-P-L-E, and says it's how to spell love to a wife. And COUPLE, he uses the word COUPLE because COUPLE is two people connected together. And that's the key of how women view relationships. Women want connectivity. And so how to spell love to your wife? COUPLE. The first one is the letter C for closeness. She wants you to be close. She longs for relational connectivity. And Egbert says, when you come home after you've been apart, the first few moments set the tone for the rest of the evening. When you come home, when you're together, or she comes home, whatever, when you're together for the first time after not being together for a while, the first thing she wants to do is connect, okay? And that doesn't mean have sex. The first thing that she wants to do is connect relationally. Egbert says, when she married you, she thought you would be like her best girlfriend and share that kind of conversation only more. And so she longs to connect in conversation. And so even if you're, guys, if you're exhausted and, you know, you've had a hard day and all you've done is talk to people all day and it's worn you out and all you want to do is be by yourself and get a little peace and quiet, keep in mind that that's probably possible down the road. But the first thing that she needs is she needs to connect relationally before you move into that. And if she needs to connect relationally and all you do is move into isolation for your own sake, she's going to take that as being very unloving, all right? Letter O is the number one. The second one is openness. She wants you to open up to her. And men, we have to be very intentional about this. We've talked about this before. Men don't naturally share at deeper and deeper levels, and we have to get much more intentional about this. And this, again, this is not just talking about what you're doing. It's not just talking about the events and tasks, but talking about how you're doing and how you're doing really and sharing from your heart, okay? That kind of openness. The U is for understanding. And the advice here is don't try and fix her, just listen. We're fixers, guys. We hear a challenge or a dilemma or a problem, and the first thing we want to do is we want to speak into it. Well, here's what you need to do, okay? okay? That's not always the case. But see, here again, here's what's true for men. When we communicate with each other, men communicate to solve problems and to exchange information. And we assume it's the same way in our marriages. It's not with our wives, okay? So women don't communicate just to solve problems and exchange information. And we need to keep that in mind when we're talking to them. We talked about this before. Remember, women bond through conversation. It's how they bond with their friends. It's probably how she bonded with you when you were dating. And so she wants to talk as a way to connect. Even if talking wears you out or you've been talking all day, keep in mind, she may have been talking to you, but she hasn't been talking to you. And I want my wife to feel connected to me, especially if that's a need that she has. I just need to remind myself that to do that, she needs to talk, and she needs me to be willing to talk to her. And for me, actually, to initiate that so it's not, she doesn't feel like she's just kind of trying to hound me, okay? Number four, the P is for peacemaking. She wants you to say, "I'm sorry." In other words, don't run from a conflict. Conflict is not the sign of a bad marriage, by the way. All marriages have conflict. The goal is not to not have conflict. The question is, how do you deal with conflict, okay? And men, by the way, the code of respect thing, men deal with conflict by saying, "Let's just drop it." And when men say to each other, "Hey, can we just drop it?" they mean it. And men drop it. It's a respect thing, okay? Men, here's what you need to understand. Women don't drop it. Even if they agree to drop it, they don't drop it, okay? And so if you say to your wife, "Hey, let's just drop it," and she says, "Okay," and you're thinking, "Good." She hasn't dropped it, okay? It still needs to get worked through. Issues that come up, man, this is a really helpful way. This has been really helpful for me to think of it this way. Issues that come up in a marriage are like the pop-ups that come up on your computer screen. Don't they drive you nuts, the little things that pop up? And what do you do when that pops up? Because whatever pops up is getting in the way of what you really want to be doing, right? So we all do the same thing. There's that wonderful little X in the upper right-hand corner. We just hit that, and it, poof, goes away, right? Conflict, issues in marriages are like the pop-up window. And we as men want to just hit the X and have it go away. Here, this is really helpful for me to somebody said this one time. I think Shanti Feldhahn said in a presentation he did, women have the same pop-ups. They just don't have the X in the upper right-hand corner. So when you say to your wife, "Let's just drop it," you may hit the X, but she hasn't. And so it still needs to get processed and worked through, okay? Men have a hard time saying, "I'm sorry." And this may lend some light into that, some understanding. The reason men have a hard time admitting they were wrong and saying they're sorry is not an arrogance thing, it's a respect thing. Because if I admit that I was wrong and I say I'm sorry, I'm making myself open and vulnerable for losing respect. And so at a subconscious level, it's hard for me to say I was wrong out of fear of losing respect, which is probably the opposite of actually what would happen in that case. And then number five, the L is for loyalty. She needs to know you're committed, which is different, by the way, than having you committed. When she says, "Do you love me?" Guys, have you ever had your wife say, "Do you still love me?" She's not looking for information. She's looking for reassurance. Something has happened to put that in doubt for her. And that should be like an alarm going off. If my wife says to me, "Do you still love me?" She's not asking a question. She's not wondering if I still love her. And see, we as men, we always want to just communicate information. "Well, of course I love you." Assuming that that's it. We can just push the little X in the upper right-hand corner and it's gone. the problem's gone. But if she says, do you love me, something that should be an alarm to me, it says something had happened that makes her question whether I love her. We need to talk about this. I need to find out what's going on. She's not looking for information, she's looking for reassurance. And simply telling her that you love her is not the reassurance she's looking for. What she wants to know is, were you serious when you said, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, I'll be with you regardless. She's looking for reassurance. And then finally, the letter E, number six, the E is for esteem. Esteem. She wants you to honor and cherish her. And honoring and cherishing her has to do with how you talk to her, but it also has to do with how you talk about her in front of others. And the compliments that you give her. The things that you say, the things you say to her, the things that you say about her, and stuff that is meaningful to her, not just to you. Okay, you look really hot tonight is a nice compliment. It might not mean as much to her as it does to you. Okay, you're a great mother is a great. It builds into who she is. I love the way you look when you wear that. What that kind of thing. And remembering, and it has to do with remembering special occasions, anniversaries and her birthday and the kids' birthdays, and going out of your way to make those special events. And I remember growing up in a family that my mom, went out of her way to make the kids' birthdays big deals. And a similar thing for my dad's birthday. And, and the tendency for us as dads is to do the bare minimum at a birthday. And, we make an effort. But to see my dad do, just to kind of go the extra mile and in his feeble attempt to make my mom's birthday as big a deal as he could. And so part of the esteem for her is honoring her in those things. And just kind of an aside, guys, when your wife comes out and says, and you're getting ready to go somewhere or just is trying on an outfit, and she says, how does this look on me? She's not asking you about the outfit, okay? Guys, listen to me. Here's the correct answer. When she says, how does this look on me? The answer is, you look great in that. Okay? So again, it's about esteeming her, not about the outfit. So to hold your wife in high esteem is to cherish her. To hold your husband in high esteem is to respect him. And so let's look at what Egregious has to say about, for the women, about how to show respect to your husband. He uses the acronym here, CHAIRS, how to respect a husband, CHAIRS. Because he says the husband wants to see himself as chairing the relationship. In a leadership role. Now, that does not mean power and in charge of. If you think about those of you that have served on committees before, the chairman of the committee isn't any more powerful than anyone on the committee. They just have one vote like everybody else. But their job is to lead the group into a decision-making process, to convene the conversation. And there's something the way God has wired us as men is that we long to be in that kind of a chairing the relationship role, and we should be in a role where we're convening the discussion and problem solving together. It's not, it doesn't put us in a power position to make the decisions, but to convene the discussion as a couple about how we're going to make the decision, all right? So here's the acronym CHAIRS. The first one, the letter C, is for conquest. Appreciate his desire to work and to achieve. Again, going back to our discussion of Genesis 1-3, remember we talked about how God has created us as men to work. It's a part of who we are. If you think about that, when men meet each other, the very first question a man, once he gets the name, will often ask the other guy is what? What do you do? What do you do? That's not a shallow question. It's the reality of what we do and what our work is an ingrained part of who we are as men. And so appreciate that. Let him know that you appreciate how hard he works and that you appreciate what he does. you know, those of you that are wives or were wives, have you, how often did you tell your husband you appreciated his work and how hard he worked and what he did? Tell him you're proud of what he does. And, you know, I think I've said this before, but this is so true. Women need to hear the words, I love you, and on a regular basis. Men, more than the words, I love you, men need to hear the phrase, I'm proud of you. Several years ago, I was asked to speak at a family camp, but a couple's, like a marriage retreat up in Minnesota. And I got to take my family with me, and so my wife was there with me, and boys were off doing some kids' activity. And so I was doing a session with all the couples there. The room was full, and it was a fairly intense session. One morning lasted about an hour and got done. And I remember finishing, and this is sometimes true, you know, for teachers, it's certainly true for me, is that I get done and just think, did that make any sense at all? I mean, I kind of wonder, did I do okay? And so I'm feeling a little bit, you know, self-conscious and self-doubt, and I'm walking through the crowd, and people are saying wonderful, nice, complimentary things about it, and that it was very nice, and that helped. But there was really only one opinion in the room that mattered to me. Karen was standing along the back wall, and I walked up to her, and kind of feebly, I looked at her and just said, did I do okay? And she looked me in the eye, and she said, I am so proud of you. And every guy in this room knows that there is nothing that she could have said in that moment that would have meant more to me than those words. And every guy in this room also knows if I'd walked up and said, how did I do? And she said, I love you. I would have thought, it sucked, didn't it? I knew she loved me. What I wanted to know was she proud of me? Number two, the H is for hierarchy. Appreciate his desire to protect and to provide. And so, ladies, you just need to know that even subtly criticizing his ability to provide or to take care of the family will cut a man's legs out from underneath him. There's almost nothing that you could say that would hurt him more than somehow criticizing his ability to take care of the family or to take care of the family like you wish he would or like somebody else's husband does. And so, you know, we talked about this when we talked about money and the money conflicts we get into in marriage and relationships. And so a lot of times the discussions aren't friendly when we start talking about money. And so if you complain, if you say anything about just how tight the money is or how hard it is or how you're struggling, he hears that as criticism, and he feels disrespected. And so, you know, God has given men a desire to love their wives as Christ loved the church and to give himself sacrificially for the church. And so God has given us this desire to protect and provide. It's not a responsibility that men have that we wish we didn't. You know, I think of times even parenting when something would come up and, you know, I remember a number of times when our younger son was in like junior high and he was having trouble going to sleep, and the only way we could get him to go to sleep, it was just a nervous, a neurological thing, is that I would take him for a ride in the car on streets near us that are all brick streets, and so the car would just kind of rumble. And he'd sit in the back seat and we'd be driving slow, and he would just eventually that would just kind of mellow him off to sleep. And I remember a lot of nights where I was just exhausted, and all I wanted him to do was just go to bed and go to sleep so that I can go to sleep and I can go to bed. And yet it was one of those where I go, nope, you know, I need to take him for a ride. But there was something in me in those moments where I thought, you know, I signed up for this. Absolutely, I'm going to go. This is my responsibility. And so we don't take those kind of responsibilities begrudgingly. There's something in us as men that God has called us to provide and to protect, and we wear that willingly. The third, number three, the A is for authority. Authority. Appreciate his desire to serve and to lead. And again, leadership does not mean greater than. We're not talking about the men being in a power position and the wife being in a subservient position. It means servant leadership. The leadership that Jesus modeled for us was servant leadership. But the question is, and again, in this whole section, we're talking to the women. The question, ladies, is, in his leadership, is anybody following? You know, if he turned around, would he see you responding to his leadership? Are you leaning into his leadership? Are you trusting it? Do you put confidence in his ability to lead? Or ask yourself this question: do I send the message that you can lead as long as you lead us the way I want you to lead? You know, I'd be glad to follow your leadership as long as it takes us to exactly the same place that we would get if I was leading. And again, this means always within moral and, you know, boundaries. We're not saying that if your husband leads you down some unethical, immoral, unbiblical, illegal path that you have to follow him there. We're talking about within the constraints of biblical leadership. Number four, the eye is for insight. Appreciate his desire to analyze and to counsel. You know, a wife can get so focused, we talked about this, on her husband's faults, the things that he needs to change, that she sometimes can then be so focused on that she fails to recognize respect his insight and his wisdom. And so that often leads her, because of that lack of respect she has for him, leads her to not seek his advice or to seek his counsel. And so instead she goes and asks her friends what she should do in this situation. Or she asks her dad what he would do in this situation. Or she goes to Google to find out what she should do. And even though that's expedient, even though that's simple, and we all know, pull out our phones, go to Google, what do I do here? Try asking your husband first. Because there's a chance he might have some insight into that. But if, you know, if my wife looks something up on Google that she could have asked me, in some sense, I feel hurt by that. I think, well, why? I knew the answer to that question. Why didn't you ask me? Did you know you're supposed to turn the circuit breakers off before you change a light switch? Yeah, I did know that. Ask me. And so appreciate his insight. Number five, the R is for relationship. Appreciate his desire for shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. Now, this is where men and women do relationship differently. Remember, we said that women do relationship through conversation and through talking. Listen to this scenario. When your husband says, honey, come in here and watch the Discovery Channel with me, what happens? You come in and sit down, and indeed he does watch the Discovery Channel, possibly commenting now and then about the size of those elk or look at the teeth on that crocodile. But most of the time, he's fully absorbed in what he's doing, watching TV. If you're a typical wife, you sit there thinking, I've got laundry to fold, I have to make dinner, the kids' lunches for tomorrow still aren't even packed. Eventually, you'll get up and walk away because you need to do all these things, and besides, you and your husband aren't really doing anything anyway. He's just watching TV with you sitting there beside him. You're not communicating, so how could this be building the relationship? Men bond through shared experience. Women bond through conversation. And so men build friendships with each other in what he calls side-by-side, shoulder-to-shoulder friendships, where we're doing something together. Women build face-to-face where they're conversing with each other. So don't discount his desire for relationship with you when he asks you to do something in that kind of a side-by-side, shoulder-to-shoulder friendship. Number six, the S is for sexuality. Appreciate his desire for sexual intimacy. And this is intriguing. I had never thought about this as a respect issue, but listen to what Egrich says. During counseling, a wife told me that she thought sex was a man's number one need. I responded that sex is symbolic of his deeper need, respect. By way of analogy, a wife needs emotional release through talking. When that need is met, she feels loved. When a man refuses to talk, that symbolizes to her that he does not love her or care about her need. A husband has a need for physical release through sexual intimacy. When a wife refuses, that symbolizes to him that she does not care about him and does not respect him and his need. So women, we've talked about this, women need to feel emotionally close to their husbands in order to want to have sex with them. Men need to feel sexually connected to their wives in order to feel emotionally close to them. And then to desire to act lovingly to them. So you can insert the sex thing as a part of respecting a husband in the energizing cycle. All right. So now, where do we start? How do you get off the crazy cycle, if you've been on that, which is like a washing machine going round and round, and get on to the energizing cycle? And the big question is, who starts? Well, two of the most dangerous words in marriage are this: if you. Well, if you would do this, but if you would, and we put it all on the other person. In fact, bring up that next slide, will you? We've talked about this, the energizing cycle. To assume that it needs to start with the other person is to make them responsible for the whole cycle, for the whole love and respect. If he thinks, well, you know, if she would respect me more, well, then I would be more loving to her. So it's got to start with her. She needs to be more respectful. He's saying it's her changing that will bring love and respect back to the relationship. Likewise, if she says, well, you know, if he would be more loving, well, then I'm sure I would show him more respect. I get this. Is her saying, in effect, it's him changing that's going to bring love and respect back to the relationship? Egrich says this: a husband is even called to love a disrespectful wife and a wife to respect an unloving husband. There is no justification for a husband to say, I will love my wife after she respects me, nor for a wife to say, I will respect my husband after he loves me. So this is not, if you're here as a couple, this is not the kind of teaching where you can hope the other person is listening. This is about me as a man responding to the command of God to love my wife unconditionally, because that's what he tells me to do. Wives, this is about you responding to God's command to respect your husbands unconditionally, regardless of whether your spouse responds or not. So, who starts? Who brings love and respect back into a relationship? You do. I do.